Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal, and I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. We're getting to that point of summer where Logan is starting to, it would seem that it's starting to wind down a little bit. We've talked about that, but you know, these days with the NCAA investigation going on, there's always something around the corner, and there were things that jumped out and said boo this week, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Hey, folks, before we get there, I want to remind you to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. Be sure to check in with those guys. Logan, we're going to talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss, the Super Regional, later on in the program, but I saw you on Twitter when you said that you were somehow or other ended up in Denham Springs looking for that Parrish Alford statue.
Yeah, I stopped at Walk-On's on the way back home on Monday just to have a little bite to eat. Didn't get in bed till about 4 o'clock Monday morning because of all those rain delays in the second game of that LSU regional and or super regional. And, you know, just was a late night, which meant, you know, I stayed in bed as long as I could. I got up about 10 o'clock the next morning and you know, finished up a few things that I needed to write and take care of before I hit the road. And I think that the housekeeping came by three different times trying to get me to roost me out of the room. So, you know, the checkout time wasn't until noon, and I just kept telling them I was going to check out at noon, and I did, and hit the road back. And as soon as I got back, Parrish, it was Major League Baseball draft time, and I've spent the last 3 days listening to 1,185 people being selected in the Major League Baseball draft. So we've got that to talk about, too, a little bit later in the show.
We do, folks, and we're going to hit that Super Regional here in a little bit. But let's go right on into the NCAA stuff, Logan. Earlier this week, it was announced that Rebel Rags, the clothing store, apparel, merchandise, Ole Miss goods there in Oxford, was filing suit against Kobe Jones, Leo Lewis, and Laramie Tunsil's estranged stepfather, Lindsey Miller, a defamation lawsuit. And you could kind of see it headed this way. Of course, that had been rumored for quite some time, but when it became such a big part, such an obvious part of the Ole Miss defense to discredit the testimony, mostly of Lewis, and we'll go ahead and use Lewis's name here rather than Student Athlete 39. I think it's been out there enough now. When you saw that, it just seems like that this lawsuit wouldn't be far behind. And it's interesting. The attorney is Charles Merkel out of Clarksdale. And the folks I've spoken to in the legal community, Logan, say that this guy is, you know, what did Jim Wade of Tupelo said? Well, when Charles Merkel is involved, you know the case has merit. And others have told me that he's very good at what he does and very successful. And, you know, so we'll see. I know that one thing that could happen here is some people that Ole Miss was not able to interview in the NCAA investigation may have to provide depositions. Don't know exactly who all those are. You assume that Kobe Jones and Leo Lewis, Lindsey Miller for sure, and maybe some others as well. Dan Mullen was one that Ole Miss was hopeful of interviewing but did not in the NCAA process. That is as important as anything else from the Ole Miss perspective in this. Now, these are two different cases. You know, the NCAA is going to do what it is going to do as it continues along in its process. And this is a civil lawsuit that's simply going to run parallel to that. And, you know, anything that might come to light in this lawsuit is not necessarily something that the NCAA is going to latch on to and use for its purposes as well. Right now, you know, we are in that phase where Ole Miss is waiting to hear from the NCAA. The Rebels released their response, you know, last week, and now the NCAA will say, well, this is what we think about your response. There are 60 days from May 23 for the NCAA to do that. And here's something, Logan, you know, we were told for a long time that Ole Miss was going to be transparent and was going to make its response to the NCAA public, and it did that. The school was very eager to get its side of the story out there, and of course, you saw some names, you saw a lot of others redacted, and you know there is a complaint before the Ethics Committee right now, the Ethics Commission, that it is considering whether to name the boosters. You know, all that's still to play out, but will the school release the word from the NCAA? When that word comes back, late July probably, I think the deadline would be about July 23rd on that. Will the school release that? I can't get a clear word on that. I'm not sure they're going to be so eager to come out with that, but we'll see. I have a feeling there'll be a lot of Freedom of Information requests on that, and Ole Miss will, you know, either they'll release it or they'll stonewall, or we'll see. But I'm not sure that we're going to see that NCAA response come out as publicly, come out as easily as the Ole Miss response did. But, you know, Logan, that's where we are right now. Like I said, it's like, what's coming around the corner? What's next? And you know, who will sue who, and who will speak, and you know, what's that? That's just where this is, and until we reach a point of conclusion, and you know, there are still some dates to come on the calendar before you get there, and that's not going to happen until you know probably November at the earliest. You know, I know you've been covered up in baseball as a lot of this has gone on, Logan, but. What do you think about the idea that Kobe Jones and Leo Lewis could talk in a civil suit?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I haven't heard a whole lot of it from Mississippi State side of things. If there is a side of things to hear about, you know, I really, you know, just haven't been in town a whole lot the last, you know, 3 weeks, and you know, hadn't heard anything. Really, hadn't been on campus just quite a whole lot, except for a couple of visits to the baseball office. But, you know, just, as you know, kind of looking at everything that I've seen, you know, for, you know, read that you've written, and, you know, just kind of looking at it as an outside observer, it just seems to me like it's, you know, when somebody's swimming and they're drowning and somebody goes out to save them and they try to drag them down too, that's kind of what it seems like to me. Ole Miss is drowning and trying to drag somebody down with them, you know, and that's, like I said, that's just my opinion of things, and just kind of what I've seen, you know, in red, you know, just kind of seems like they're pretty desperate at this point. They know they're in trouble, and they're going to bring as many people down with them as possible.
Well,
and we'll see if that actually happens.
They are certainly trying to bring down Leo Lewis, Logan, but it looks like that's about their only course of action at this point, because it looks like so much of what the NCAA is bringing against Ole Miss hinges on his testimony. Whether it's taking cash, straight out, or whether it was merchandise, or whether it was, food and drinks at a local place in town, that his testimony is featured prominently, and from what I can see, it just looks like two versions here, and the problem for Ole Miss, that there are two versions of what different parties say is the truth, and the NCAA Committee on Infractions is going to have to decide which version of the truth it believes. It's going to have to pick one of those. And the problem here is, from the Ole Miss perspective, you're not sending this out to the Fifth Circuit or anything. This is not an independent body. You know, this is an NCAA case, and you're going to be heard by an NCAA committee, the Committee on Infractions. After that, there is one body that you can appeal the committee's ruling to, and that's another NCAA group. Now, both of these committees, the Committee on Infractions and the Appeals Committee, both of them have one independent committee member, someone who the NCAA manual says is not affiliated with the school, will have some sort of legal expertise. But by and large, you know, this is the NCAA doing its own thing. You're being heard by the Committee on Infractions, and then you appeal to another NCAA committee. So, you know, those groups are going to have to decide that, you know, they're going to have to decide which version of the truth they are going to believe when they go to hand down penalties. I will say that when you talk about dragging somebody down with you, when you read that Ole Miss response, they do a good job of dragging Leo Lewis down. They do a good job of poking holes in his testimony and casting doubt. And like I said, that's about all they can do at this point. So that's where we are with the NCAA investigation right now. Still a lot of the summer left, and it's going to be interesting. You know, we've talked, Logan, about how Ole Miss might handle this at media days, how Hugh Freeze would field questions or not field questions, if he might make that blanket statement at the beginning that I can't address this because it's an ongoing investigation. I'm not going to answer these questions. They're going to be there regardless, but it's going to be a situation where, you know, he's going to have to make some sort of statement. He's not going to be able to just walk away. And the whole civil suit now just adds a new wrinkle to it with a lot of different storylines coming out of that. It'll be interesting to see you know, who both of these schools bring to media days, but that's coming up. Gosh, Logan, I can't believe less than a month away, man. And it seems like it's right here upon us.
Yeah, and like I said, my sports year just actually ended on early morning hours of Monday, so I'm just now, you know, the dust really hadn't even settled on my season yet, and you know, here we are talking about media days, and you're right, it's right around the corner. So, you know, you and I both have got to get some vacation time in before next thing you know, fall camp will be starting up. So, we'll be alternating some vacations and probably overlapping a little bit too. Yeah. Over the next few weeks. So we may not have a show for you guys for, you know, some of that time, because you know we've got to take some vacation time at some point as well.
Well, give us a Cliff Notes version, man, of the Super Regional. Of course, we saw the scores. We saw you saw State competitive in both games, but eventually losing in two. What were your thoughts on what went on in Baton Rouge?
Well, I think it's a lot of, you know, the same story that they've had all season. You know, they just didn't have the pitching. And, you know, their best opportunity was in that first game on Saturday. Connor Pilkington goes out, gives them six shutout innings, and he gets into the latter stages of that ball game and kind of just runs out of gas. And, you know, they go to the bullpen, and Peyton Plumlee, you get some out, you get some, you know, one good inning there, and then, you know, he gets roughed up in the next. Mississippi State was leading 3-0 going into the eighth inning of that ball game and gives up four runs in the bottom of the eighth. And so, yeah, LSU just finally got the State's bullpen there in the eighth inning and ended up winning that first game 4-3. And Mississippi State goes with Jacob Billingsley in game two. It was kind of interesting. They didn't name a starter for game two going into the series. And Jacob Billingsley had pitched so well in the week before down in Hattiesburg, pitched nine complete game down there. So they tried to, you know, recreate that same magic. He's kind of been sporadic as the season's gone along, struggles with his command. And five pitches into that ball game on Sunday, Parrish, they already had somebody warming up in the bullpen. Jacob Billingsley did not record an out in that ball game. He gave up three hits, a walk, and ended up two runs, ended up scoring. So, you know, just a bad start for Mississippi State. They fell behind 3-0 by the second inning of that ball game. Ended up battling back, scored four runs in the bottom of the third. So Mississippi State takes a 4-3 lead there and kept it for a couple of innings. And since they had to go to the bullpen so early in that ball game, it was the same story once again. You know, they just didn't have the arms to throw out there. LSU scores six runs, I think, in the sixth inning, and ended up scoring five more runs in the top of the ninth. Ended up winning that ball game 14-4 to advance on to Omaha, and that put an end to Mississippi State's season. But, you know, I think Mississippi State just really overachieved this year. I mean, they just didn't have a whole lot to work with. They had all those injuries, had nine pitchers go down during the season. Just didn't have the personnel. I mean, they had some talent, obviously. You know, Brent Rooker, probably the best player in the country. Jake Mangum, obviously very talented player, led the league in hitting 2 years ago and, you know, struggled with a broken hand this year and played through it. But they were really essentially down to one starting pitcher all year, Connor Pilkington. And then they had Riley Self and Spencer Price, who were pretty good at the back end of the bullpen. And that's really all they had to do, had to work with. And they had some position players who stepped in as pitchers throughout the year to kind of spell them out. But, you know, Cole Gordon and Jake Mangum weren't, you know, recruited for their pitching ability. They're both sophomores, and they didn't even throw a pitch last season. So, you know, State finishes the year 40-27. I think they've got a bright future ahead with Andy Canizzaro. He's finally going to – even this recruiting class coming in that signed this year, he didn't recruit hardly any of those guys, if any of them. So it's still, you know, another couple of years before he actually gets his own players here in Starkville and is able to recruit to that style. But, you know, he does such a great job. The players love him to death. And you listen to Brent Rooker speak about his relationship with Andy Canizzaro after that game on Sunday. Well, it was actually the early hours of Monday when he was talking. I think we had the press conference about 2:15 in the morning. And he was just talking about how just his appreciation, just how close that he became with him, how much he improved since Andy took over the job back in the first part of November. So just what he's done since the first part of November till now, I think it bodes well for Mississippi State in the future.
Well, Logan, you've been following the draft for both of us, man. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, players drafted and prospects drafted from both schools. I know that Ole Miss lost a couple of good arms among their prospects in the second round on Tuesday. And one of the things that they were able to do a year ago was to get their entire signing class to campus. And I don't think they'll be able to do that this year. So hit the highlights of the draft for us.
Yeah, you know, Stephen Jennings and Caden Lemons, two right-handers that Ole Miss was going to bring in, two right-handed pitchers. Both of those guys went in the second round, and then they had another left-handed pitcher, Jordan Fowler, going the 26th round. So you'll have to kind of keep an eye on him. He was drafted by the Rangers. But more than likely, Stephen Jennings, Caden Lemons, you know, they're not going to make it to campus. Most guys that drafted in the second round are going to go pro and make a lot of money in doing so. So, yeah, but Ole Miss was more fortunate than Mississippi State was as far as getting some of those draftees on campus, more than likely. State had two players also drafted in the second round, a first baseman outfielder, Renardo Rivera, and an outfielder, Quentin Holmes. Both of those guys were taken in the second round. And then a lot of junior college players that State had on board, Troy Bacon and Pearson McMahon, two pitchers. Both of those players went in the fourth round. Tyreek Reed, a first baseman outfielder from Itawamba. He went in the eighth round. Bryson Hutcherson's a high school player. He went in the 12th round. So those are some prospects that they kind of keep an eye on. Chad Bryan as well, who's drafted in the 39th round. So you got a chance to probably get him to campus. Some fortunate news: Tanner Allen, Josh Hatcher, Jordan Anderson. Those are players that were drafted on the final day of the draft. All of those guys have already made announcements that they're going to come to Mississippi State. And some more big news, Jake Mangum, who was drafted in the 30th round by the Yankees. He was obviously a guy that could have went on the first day, but he had told players or told scouts and major league personnel that he was leaning towards coming back to school. He slips all the way to the 30th round. He announced this soon after he's drafted that he's coming back to Mississippi State for his junior season. So they've got some pieces to build around for next year. But, you know, the big story, Brent Rooker goes in the first round, 35th overall to the Minnesota Twins. Minnesota's the team that drafted him a year ago in the 38th round. So he made himself a lot of money by coming back for his junior season. And, you know, if to go from the 38th round where you're probably just scraping the bottom of the barrel to get a little bit of money, and next thing you know, he's making, you know, close to $2 million for his draft slot. So he did really well. And then Ryan Gridley goes in the 11th round to the Oakland Athletics. So I have to see, you know, kind of where Ryan, if he's leaning towards coming back for his senior season. That 11th round spot is kind of tricky. I mean, obviously they can throw some money at him, but he was one of the first names off the board on day three. For Ole Miss, they didn't have any players drafted in the first 2 days of the draft. They had five players selected on day three. David Parkinson went to the Phillies in the 12th round. Tate Blackman went to the White Sox in the 13th round. Colby Bortles went in the 22nd round to the Tigers. Brady Feigl went to the Angels in the 35th round. Kyle Watson goes to the Pirates in the 37th round. And even a former Ole Miss Rebel, Nick Perkins, who's now at Drury, he got drafted by the Nationals in the 28th round. So those are kind of, you know, some of the area guys that you know, you and I both cover, and that's kind of where they went in the draft.
Logan, I just kind of stopped keeping up after like the 28th or 29th, man. I did notice Feigl going late, and you know, the Rebels need him to come back. You know, they need all this pitching to come back when it looks like the two young guys going in the second round probably won't be a part of the program. But the thing Ole Miss needs, man, they need the bats. You know, I think they've got good young pitching, and I think it will continue to develop. And you know, you never want to not add pitching in a recruiting class. You always want some pitching. But if there is ever a year that Ole Miss could kind of stand pat maybe and develop what they have and let that be the path for improvement, it would be this year. They've got to get better. They've got to get different bats in the program, and we'll see if they can do that with this signing class. Tate Blackman in the 13th round, that's kind of, you know, he could come back, and Tate Blackman is a senior, a little bit more improvement. He could be a guy that maybe steps in and improves from his junior to senior season. If he comes back, maybe he hits about 325, 330 or something like that. You know, Ole Miss got better offensively as the season went on, but they were atrocious for the first half of it. So when you're starting at that point, it's really hard to notice the improvement. And you know, there was some, but when I say improvement, you're looking at guys who maybe saw their averages climb up to 310 or 315 for a spell or maybe something like that. Great college hitters. You know, you're talking about guys that are hitting, you know, 325, 350 and beyond. And great teams have guys that do that, and Ole Miss needs to find those guys again offensively, and their better teams have had that. So maybe we'll see that from the Rebels next year. Hey, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We thank you for clicking in with us. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. Logan and I, on regular schedule, will be here with you around Thursday. We'll probably miss a few coming up with vacation and whatnot, but football is around the corner, and we'll be here for you. Make sure to come back and join us.